Film Nerds Unlimited, lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Graham Flanagan of Business Insider, Ben Stark of Wundermill Films.
Welcome to the Film Nerds Unlimited podcast. This is Graham Flanagan, and I'm joined by Ben Stark to talk about Pacific Rim Uprising, the sequel to Guillermo del Toro, Academy Award-winning director and producer Guillermo del Toro's Pacific Rim, which I believe came out in, 2011?
2013.
Oh, wow. Okay. So we've been waiting a while for this. At one point, I think a lot of us were worried that it wouldn't happen because the domestic box office for Pacific Rim was okay, but just not really enough to warrant another giant budget sequel. But it did well enough to yield a sequel. It did well enough overseas, that is, and especially in China, to yield a sequel. And I think that you can see in this movie a lot of the worldwide global appeal that the movie is trying to have. We can talk about that more. But I saw it today in a theater that was not very crowded. I haven't checked the box office returns for the weekend yet. But Ben, I want to go ahead and get your initial impression.
Yeah. So, I saw it myself just last night. There weren't a whole lot of people in the theater. It was 9 o'clock showing. There was a newborn infant in the theater who definitely enjoyed it, based on the noises. I kind of love the movie. I'm a pretty big fan of the first one. It's a clear step down from that one. Obviously, when you have an auteur like Guillermo del Toro, and you replace him with a very, very good, director of television, Stephen DeKnight, there's going to be a little bit of a difference, but I do think that this was, honestly a lot better than I was expecting. And I just had a ton of fun. I think there's plenty of nitpicks and stuff, but at the end of the day, man, the movie got several audible reactions out of me. And when I walked out, I was just in a great mood because I had seen something big and loud and fun.
Yeah, I agree. Overall, I had fun with it too. I thought that, one of my main gripes was with the last movie, which I love, was that too much of the action happened at night. And obviously that's a way to make it a little bit easier and a little less expensive for the special effects department to stage these scenes, is to not have to fully light all the action. And here they staged most of the big set pieces in full daylight. So I was pumped about that. I really enjoyed the set pieces. I agree with you. It wasn't as good as the first one. And there was never that big moment that you had in the first movie when the Rinko Kikuchi character says, "For my family," takes the sword out and sort of decapitates the kaiju that's flying up into the atmosphere. Just
right.
just a holy shit moment like that, where you leave the theater just kind of just running on adrenaline. But that being said, I did enjoy the cast. I enjoyed it. The set pieces were good. It didn't have that sort of singular, wow moment.
So I guess just spoilers, because I did want to talk two moments I did have. So for me, the moment that I probably had the loudest reaction was there's this I think his name is Gottlieb, that character,
yeah.
Kind of the guy with the cane. There's a part where they're like, hey, it's towards the third act. And they're like, hey, you have this technology that allows Jaegers to fly, basically, and you've been developing it. How quickly can you do it? And it's a slow pushing on him. And he's like, well, let me think. I've been working on this. I think under the circumstances, I can get it done today. And as soon as he says it, it cuts to the Pacific Rim movie from the music from the first movie, and then goes into this montage of them working on it. And in the theater, I was like, oh yeah. Totally went crazy for that. And then the other one was actually more of this weird horror moment where it's revealed that Charlie Day's character is addicted to mind melding with this, alien brain that he keeps in a tank in his bedroom named Alice. That was just that I made some sort of noise for that, where it's just like, wow, this movie is just as weird and kind of goopy and gross as the first one was. You know, like it didn't, the trailers for this film made it look like Power Rangers. You know, it was like, here's the YA version of Pacific Rim, where it'll probably be, it won't be as eccentric and as weird and as trippy as the first film, but I think it retains basically all of that. And that was like the moment for me where I was like, wow, this is still a really weird movie, you know, a really weird universe where there's this strange, kind of vaguely psychosexual connection between this guy and this alien brain that's like sucking against the glass wall of his tank. Honestly, they could make a Shape of Water Oscar movie out of that setup, probably.
I didn't think of that. You got to think, that was probably Del Toro's, one of his few contributions to the story was how he had a guy with a relationship with some sort of supernatural being in a tank. But yeah, well, I mean, so that was the big plot twist, was that there was a heel turn for the Charlie Day character. And honestly, I thought that was it was a little weird. It was a little strange the way it was all handled, where it's basically just, you know, confirmed, oh, yep, he's sort of dealing with multiple personality, kind of a situation where he's being possessed by something. He didn't really see much of a struggle there between him and, you know, the bad side of him that had taken over. So that's why I was a little unclear. Like, had it completely taken over him, or was he sort of fighting with it? You know, is the good Charlie Day character, Newt, fighting with that character? What was your, I mean, did you like the way that was sort of executed?
Yeah. I mean, at a certain point, it does seem like he just kind of gives up. But that came after there was a bit of struggle. It did seem like he kind of had, like, the beginning, he was putting up a good front, you know, in terms of, like, making it seem like he was his normal self. And then it kind of, once the plot unraveled, he was able to let go, and then he just kind of gave up. So I think there's a line by Gottlieb about how, you know, he's still in there somewhere, you know, and that's why they didn't just kill him off. So I think there's, and it's inferred, but yes, I mean, during the third act, there's no struggle whatsoever. He's just like the mastermind standing on the building with his iPad, you know, telling the kaiju what to do. But I did love that twist, because the whole movie, the first few acts set up this human character, the CEO of a company who has been developing this drone technology. And in any other movie, you'd think that, okay, she's going to be the villain. And while that was being set up, I was like, that's a reversal of the first film, because one of my favorite things about the first film was that humans aren't the bad guys. Like, the first film was entirely about humanity finding a common bond to fight these monsters. And then I was like, really? Like, you're going to do it like the whole corporate evil, like, this is just a bad person. And then the fact that it was a twist on that nope, it actually ends up being these precursor, whatever they're called, alien guys from the other dimension doing this. And really the only human evil involved is just Charlie Day's, like, addiction. You know, it's like, you know, it's his humanity that allows him to succumb to these things. And I was like, okay, everything, honestly, in this movie holds up all of the values and the ideas set up in the first film. Like, another thing I thought was great was the reliance on memory, you know, and the absolutely brutal flashback that the girl has to losing her family. it was that kind of stuff where I was like, wow, it's really going for all of the same heart and thought that the first film was going for. It just doesn't have the deftness of touch that Del Toro would bring to it.
Yeah, and he's listed as a producer on the film, a producer, not an executive producer. So he said that he was planning on directing this and spent some time developing it before leaving to do Shape of Water. But another producer listed is John Boyega. Part of his deal is that he would produce the film as well as star in it. So I really like Boyega. I mean, I think he is a real star, and he's got a ton of charisma. You know, showed a lot of humor here in this, and just, you know, I think he's the real deal, and hopefully this is a step towards, you know, and the movie leaves room open for a sequel. I really hope they do one. Again, Do you know what the box office is for the weekend on this?
I think I read something on Friday that it was like projected or kind of at like a 23-24 million. So it's like, it's not great, but I feel like I wouldn't be surprised if it's exactly like the first one, you know, where it's like
in China,
because the first one was like not great, but then it started to make enough that it was like, okay. And then overseas it made enough. So
right,
you said earlier, I think that the global appeal of this thing is just like obvious, you know, like,
yeah,
it's so fun and bright and flashy and
yep.
simple, you know. I mean, there's a lot of characters. There's more characters, I feel like, than the first one, and you know that a lot of dialogue gets shoved in quick little scenes with a bunch of different people, and then some people disappear for a while. So, it's not exactly fluid, but at the same time, I feel like it's all simple enough that it's relatable enough that I think it'll make a ton of money worldwide, and I hope it does, because the stinger of this one or the end kind of tells us that, you know, they're about to go invade that other dimension, and that's the movie that I want to see.
So what did you think about John Boyega as the leading man here?
I feel like Ben Flanagan and I have had a number of kind of whiny Film Nerds Unlimited shows where we've talked about how, you know, Hollywood plugs in these underwear model actors that are just kind of like devoid of any sort of charisma, and you know, nobody has like the screen presence of a Harrison Ford or something. And I think John Boyega is 100% of that Harrison Ford. He's cut from that cloth. You know, he's just a guy that you can give him whatever line and he's going to make it work. You know, he brings that swagger and that charisma and that screen presence. And yeah, I mean, from his opening scenes, I was like, oh, it doesn't matter what the script does. It doesn't matter what the story does. I'm gonna have a good time with this movie because I like I like seeing this guy on screen.
Totally, totally. It's interesting. I enjoyed the sort of love triangle angle that they had with his buddy, was it Kyle Eastwood, isn't it?
Scott Eastwood.
Speaking of
totally devoid cardboard guys.
Right, but I thought he did his job here, and I enjoyed his performance. But they didn't give Boyega like a straight up romantic interest. They made him sort of share one with Eastwood in this comedic angle where these two guys are kind of pining after the same woman, and they never really paid that off. By the end, obviously it cut to her when they thought that Eastwood's character was like in a bad situation, showing that she cared, but they never really paid it off with like who won, unless I missed something there.
Yeah, I think it was supposed to be a totally brotherly kind of thing where they weren't actually ever competing, you know, like that if for some reason she picked John Boyega, I feel like he would have, you know, deferred her to him, you know, and been like, no, actually, like I don't want to steal his girlfriend.
Okay. Well,
it kind of seemed like a Cyclops Wolverine kind of thing, you know, where it's like the rogue guy is kind of like, he's into the girl because, you know, she's attractive and she could give him the time of day because she's into him because he's the bad boy. But at the same time, like the Boy Scout has her true love and true affection. I thought it was okay.
The white Boy Scout.
Well, yeah.
Can he not just win? Can we not just like let him have win the girl? You know what? That was one kind of weird note for me, where it was like,
yeah, she was in general.
But for John Boyega, win. You know, I know. She wasn't in it that much.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
but she was a cool, like, strong character for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, I think there is something about the first movie. Has this relationship between Charlie Hunnam and Rinko Kikuchi characters that is like, it is clearly like romantic, but it's never like taken to any sort of level. Like I think they end the movie on them hugging. And I kind of like that there's a, I don't know. It's like, it's not the movies. These movies are not interested in people that are that romantically involved because the world is ending all the time. So it's more just like, and I think in this one, it makes more sense that he gains a sister since he loses a sister early on. So I think it would have felt like a bit tacked on if he had just like started tonguing, you know, Scott Eastwood's girlfriend at the end.
So before we get to the Jaeger action, which is why you go pay your movie pass to see this movie. I was really surprised and disappointed that Ron Perlman's character didn't show up. You know, you think he's dead in Pacific Rim 1, and then he, like, shows up, and it's like, yes, thank God, that awesome character is still alive, you know, and that's sort of a surprise at the end of the movie. I was really hoping that he would come in and sort of, like, have something to do with the Charlie Day arc. So, like, what happened there? Do you know anything about that, or were you expecting to do anything?
No, I don't, and I wasn't. I should have probably rewatched the first one more recently. Because that's a great point, and he's a great character, and yeah, that's
so good.
What a huge,
like,
missed opportunity!
I know.
Yeah, that's a huge missed opportunity. I don't know. Yeah, maybe he only works with Del Toro, or he only works with Sons of Anarchy alumni like Charlie Hunnam.
I really hope. I don't know what happened. I'd like to read up on that, but you know, I remember at the end of that movie thinking, "Oh man, like he's got to live in case there's a sequel," you know? He did, and he emerge from the kaiju?
He, like, pops out of its stomach.
Yeah, and I was like, yes, he's going to be back. And so I kept thinking, then I was thinking about that during the movie. I was like, oh, man, when Ron Perlman shows up, when his music hits, it's going to be so awesome, you know? But that never happened, so that's kind of weird. But, okay, so tell me about the battle, the Jaeger and kaiju battle, Jaeger versus Jaeger battle, which is really cool in this one. What did you think about the effects and the action, compared especially to Pacific Rim, the first Pacific Rim? Do you think they took a step forward? Do you think it was sort of more of the same? What was your reaction to the big effects set pieces?
They were all awesome, first of all. But I think in general, like the first one, They were so concerned about making sure everything was as photoreal and kind of clean as possible that, like you said, they kind of used rain and darkness to kind of hide a little bit of stuff, you know. So the first one ended up looking kind of more awesome because it was a little bit more mysterious and it was just a little bit more textured. And this one, they didn't do that. They just turned the lights on and just let you see all the CGI and all its flaws and everything else. But I honestly thought that was fine. You know, I mean, again, like it was the scale. I didn't feel like the scale as much this time, as much of the time. It definitely felt more like, you know, action figures, well-lit action figures running around punching each other. But at the same time, like, I'm okay with that. And I never lost track of what I was looking at. I never lost track of how the Jaeger pilots were tied to what the Jaegers were doing. I felt like all of that stuff was so clear and so so engaging that I just I enjoyed the fights in this almost as much as the other one. Again, it didn't have that. The moment for me in the first one is when the one Jaeger ends up having wings, and you're like, oh my god, like in an escalation. I mean, this one does. The kaiju has wings,
right.
And this one does have the kind of mega kaiju. Where it combined,
that's cool.
Really very cool. Yeah. So, but overall, I they were a lot of fun. And I love that they didn't really consider collateral damage at all. You know, there was a part where Gypsy, whatever, is using this magnet lasso thing to just like pull skyscrapers onto this kaiju, like one after the other. And it's just like awesome. You know, there's like no, I mean, that has its place in movies, and, you know, Marvel movies have built entire narrative arcs around collateral damage, but it's like, I don't always need that. You know, sometimes I just want to see, you know, monsters and robots fighting in the city and not have to worry about what's going on in those buildings.
That's definitely way more entertaining than spending an entire movie talking about collateral damage.
How you should feel bad. Yeah.
Which is what Civil War is. So moving on, that was a joke start. Like that was a shot. That was a total rib.
That is what that movie's about.
You have nothing to say, man. Come on.
Well, it's okay. It's okay for a movie to tackle that, but I don't need that in every single movie, you know? That's also what Batman Superman's about.
Yeah. Right. I haven't seen it, probably won't, but yeah, but I've heard that.
It's a classic.
So I think we've covered it here. I really enjoyed it. I don't think it's as good as the first one, but I would definitely watch this one again. I can't wait to kind of go back and enjoy those set pieces again. Well, and I feel like they earned a sequel for this one.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the Rotten Tomatoes score for this is 44%. What do you think is not connecting with people? I mean, you and I like this. I feel like there's plenty of movies that
I hate that Rotten Tomatoes still has a impact on what, on, you know, people's perception of a movie. If critics who've just come off of the Oscar season, you know, are going into this movie expecting something else other than a pretty, as you said, simple story about robots fighting monsters, robots fighting each other, then that's their problem. For a movie like this, you know, again, I don't think it's as good as the first one, so that's a critique. But I still put it in the plus column because it accomplishes its basic mission. And yeah, critics are all over the place. They go into movies with expectations that aren't fair. They go into movies thinking about other stuff. Like I just don't put a lot of stock in Rotten Tomatoes scores for that reason.
Yeah, I just feel like that this is that the critical and box office reaction to these two movies is why the Transformers movies are what they are. And it's here you have two movies that are about, you know, heroes and giant robots fighting monsters. And that sounds dumb. But at the same time, these are two movies with well thought out characters, with totally cohesive and satisfying narratives that set up and pay off things and have twists and, you know, and they're both about something, you know, they're both about community and togetherness and unity, and they have themes and they're important, and they could, you know, they use their platform to say something about humanity and about our time and our culture. And they're, you know, geographically the action makes sense, and they're rewarded with bad critical reviews and bad box office. But meanwhile, Michael Bay just does whatever he wants and puts whatever trash he wants on screen, and people love it. And we're all telling the Michael Bays of the world that, yes, don't try. You know, don't bother making your giant dumb movie into something more than what it is. And that's
what you just said is true about what this movie strives to do and what it does and how it does have a message. And I think that a lot of critics would just eye roll you saying that just because you're talking about Pacific Rim. You know, and a lot of people won't allow themselves to consider that a movie like this does actually have a deeper foundation there upon which, you know, all of the action is built upon. And, you know, so that's their problem. I think a lot of kids, a lot of people like us are going to enjoy this movie and you know, especially all over the world. And so I'm just glad. I mean, hopefully these critics won't be able to stop this, because good on the whole crew behind this for actually trying to do all those things that you mentioned, you know, tell a story, say something other than just, you know, what Michael Bay does. It's a good point. And so I, you know, God willing, we can get this kind of storytelling and care applied to that Transformers verse whenever Michael Bay decides to walk away from it. But when that take or that approach to Transformers it resulted in so much money, it's just not very likely that's going to happen.
Yeah, where's the incentive to be to have quality if quality doesn't get you anything?
So let's wrap it up. Just I want to ask you, what was your favorite Jaeger moment in this movie?
I mean, gosh, it's hard not to say the magnet whip thing. I think in general, I think one of the cooler moments or just kind of funnier moments is a moment that's in the trailer where the lead Jaeger kind of does like the fist to hand gesture.
Yeah.
And because they're so beat up, like as soon as he does that, he like stumbles over and John Boyega's character says, oh, that was supposed to be epic. That's a really great summing up of this movie of where it's like, all they want to do is be the coolest guys around, but everything is falling apart so quickly and so bad that they can't, you know, they're just scraping by to survive. And I love the desperation there.
Yeah. For me, there was one cool moment where in the Sydney, Australia fight scene where the bad Jaeger, uppercuts Gypsy Avenger against a building and like just as the, yep. he just, flies up the building in the face of the building. It's just like destroyed. I love that. That was a really cool spot, as it were. But the movie's filled with them, and I look forward to checking it out again eventually, and hopefully hearing the announcement of Pacific Rim 3 with Boyega attached, and hopefully the return of Ron Perlman and that character. Hopefully there's no bad blood there, and he can bring that back, man. Because when he shows up, that's going to be a big pop, man. Well, Ben, I think we've covered everything. I'm glad you rushed to the theater to check this out, just like I did. But I really enjoy talking about it with you.
Yeah, thanks, Graham.
All right, man, thank you. And stay tuned for more Film Nerds Unlimited podcast. There's a lot on the horizon. A new Spielberg, man, in this week, within the same week, we have a new Wes Anderson, a new Steven Soderbergh, a new Spielberg, and a Pacific Rim sequel. Man, what a time.
Yeah, and we got Rampage coming up.
Yeah, they moved it back a week to April 13th. I'm pumped, man. I feel like the summer movie season is already here. So this is a great time.
Yeah, exactly. Summer movies start in March now. So, yeah.
I know.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. A lot of good stuff.
All right, man. We'll talk soon.
For more Film Nerds Unlimited, go to filmnerds.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you like what you hear, rate and review our podcast on iTunes. Keep an eye out for the next issue of Film Nerds Unlimited, coming soon.